Novelist Mark Salzman was mugged in 1978, his apartment was robbed in 86, and his wife's car was stolen in 92. He's still angry about all of it. So when an invitation came to teach writing at Central Juvenile Hall in Los Angeles, Salzman wasn't thrilled, but he went anyway. What happened there changed his life and the lives of his students. Salzman writes about the experience in a memoir called True Notebooks. He told Steve Paulson about his first day at Central.
When I went in, I thought I'd remembered reading somewhere that violent criminals don't like it if you look them in the eye. So I now remember that that was actually an article about dogs. But at the time, I thought it meant I shouldn't look at them in the eye. So I decided instead to look at their hands to avoid creating a conflict. And they were each holding a piece of notebook paper on which he'd written either an essay or a poem that they were each going to read aloud to me. That was going to be how the class worked that night. And as I looked at their hands, I saw that their hands were shaking so violently from fear and anxiety that it looked like a cartoon. I'd never seen anything like it. And my own fear then was replaced by, I guess, an early paternal instinct. I just wanted to reassure them. I saw that they were children all of a sudden. I wanted to reassure them it was okay, that it was all right to read their pieces.
So they were shaking with fear about reading these pieces out loud.
They were so nervous about what I would think. I mean, they were really deeply afraid that I would squelch the beginnings of this endeavor they'd embarked upon. And then they started reading. And what I had expected, I thought I was going to be hearing essentially rap lyrics, chest beating, you know, gloating over defeating foes and that kind of business. But instead, these pieces were so vulnerable. I don't think when I was 17 I could have written so honestly about my own regrets, my own fears. If you like, I can read just a part of one of the essays that, in fact, was the very first essay the first boy read aloud.
Oh, that'd be great if you could.
The essay begins describing his cell, saying that the window that looks out of his cell is covered with gang engravings. You know, the kids there will do anything they can to continue tagging. And so it turns out these windows, if you scratch hard enough, you can engrave them. So he's trying to look out to see a cloud, but it's obscured by all the engravings. So toward the end, he says, "Like a boy stares into a pet shop for his new puppy, I stare out my window and from a distance I see a few clouds beginning to emerge. I stop and look at the engravings on the window which keep me from clearly seeing the process of nature unfold. All these gangs are carved into this window. I stop and think back. A year ago, I wouldn't have seen beyond the graffiti, and putting my own tag would have been my first reaction. I put some thought into how I would have reacted, and I realized that for the 5 years of being a gang member, I've missed out on so much. I didn't appreciate the beauty life and nature gives us on a daily basis. My gang had me so hypnotized that if I had tried to look out into the sky, my eyes wouldn't have seen past the gang writing that scars the window."
So when you hear a story like that, I guess it makes you want to go and spend some time with these kids.
Well, I was just so surprised, first of all, by what they were writing about. And second, it was so obvious to me that like all children, particularly adolescents, they needed to bond with an adult, it being boys, an adult male, so badly. And their desire, their longing was so intense that it was so unlike what I'd expected that I felt I just had to go back to see it again.
Well, one of the big surprises to me as I was reading your book was the hunger that these kids had to write. I mean, I never would have expected that. And, you know, these are kids who, for the most part, grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and, you know, had every obstacle thrown in their way, you know, were incarcerated now, and sometimes they were going to serve many years in prison. And yet writing seemed to matter so much more for them than it would for the typical student in a college creative writing class.
Well, that certainly was my experience. The intensity of their desire to do something positive through writing was just astonishing to me. I think part of it is, I'll bet if you were to come down, if you were a drawing teacher, you'd have the same response. I'll bet if you were a basketball coach and you took a genuine interest in the kids, you might get the same response. It may not be that there's something magical about writing. I think they just want so badly to feel there's some direction in life and that there is someone who is challenging them and who is watching what they do and who will encourage their victories, who's going to respond to them in some way, take a personal interest. But beyond that, what I do think is unique about writing is that I came to feel, working with these kids, I became more aware than ever of how badly all of us want to see our lives in some kind of a narrative context. We want to feel we're on a coherent journey. We came from somewhere to get to where we are today. And by knowing how we got to where we are today, that helps us form some idea where we would like to go. And all of these kids, one thing they all had in common is a sense of absolute confusion, a sense of there being no coherence or pattern to their lives and having no understanding of how they got to where they are today. And writing gives you that little bit of extra, I think by writing your thoughts down, they become a little bit less ephemeral, and then you can build on them. You can actually begin to see patterns or, you know, to see a kid writing about a time when a parent let him down and then have him look up and say, you know, that happened over and over again. And just that look of surprise and the first glimmer of understanding come over one of those kids' faces was so deeply satisfying and reassuring to me because it reminded me that my own needs aren't that unusual.
There's one writing sample of one of the first kids in your class who wrote about this collision between the angel and the devil. Could you read that one?
Sure. The angel is coming at full speed in one direction while the devil comes in the other. The devil with his pitchfork running at full speed, aiming to hit the angel in the chest, all of a sudden stops with the force of the angel's power. The devil tells the angel that he's going to kill him and that he's going to go to hell, but the angel responds, "I'm with God, and the only place where I'm going to is his paradise." The devil then strikes him, sending him to eternal fire. The angel on his knees, weak, all of a sudden gets his energy back and strikes the devil with his wings and sends him to heaven. There they are, throwing blows, wrestling, doing what they can to win. All of a sudden, they're running full speed towards each other when they collide and become one. That one is me. The wonderful thing about that is it described him so perfectly, really described all the boys, but him in particular. He was so passionate and sincere about wanting to change his life. He was taking confirmation classes. He wanted so badly to do something positive with his life, but he had the attention span of a gnat. And so in the middle of a sentence about how he had succeeded, he changed his life, he would then look out the day room window and see a female inmate crossing the yard and become completely oblivious to what he had just been talking about and say, "Why can't we have conjugal visits?" and to see the struggle go back and forth in this kid, you just had to feel for him. He was trying, but he was just up against such a force. So many forces pulling him in every conceivable direction.
Well, you tell the story of another kid, Kevin Jackson, who really embodied these conflicting forces, the angel and the devil. As you describe him, he was this very sweet, soft-spoken kid, but he had committed a terrible crime.
Yeah, he'd lost his parents when he was 9 years old in a car crash, and from that point on was shuttled between foster care, and occasionally relatives would try to take care of him, but no one was really prepared for that. His brothers were all in gangs, so not surprisingly, he ended up in the gang himself. Now, I think by temperament, he was the kind of kid who, under different circumstances, would have just had a wonderful life, because by temperament, he's very shy, very thoughtful, not given to sudden bursts of anger. He would hold it in. And I think that worked against him because it turns out he had a conflict with these boys in another gang. This was all documented that they had chased him. They had been, you know, pestering him. And finally, he took to carrying a gun. And one day they confronted him at a movie theater. One of them hit him. And so Kevin just pulled this gun out and shot him, shot all three of them. One died, the other two survived. And it turns out that those three, they were not armed that night. So Kevin was convicted of one count of second-degree murder and two counts of attempted murder, so he's going to serve a life sentence for it. And with him, he was a model prisoner. The guards loved him. Every facility he'd been to, he was the kid that everyone knew you could count on. And it's just a tragic case where you see someone like this who, it's not that he has some terrible evil locked inside him, it's that he had very, very poor social skills, ways to manage these situations. He had poor models, and he just had no sense of coherence in his life. He didn't have adults who really were watching very carefully what he was doing.
Do you have one or two more favorite samples of writing from your students?
Sure. I had one student, a boy who was so imaginative that he didn't really need specific topics. Often the boys would come into class and say, "Mark, I am so stressed. I can't think of anything. Give me a topic." And so I would find something for him. But there was one boy who was so imaginative that all I had to do was write a word at the top of his notebook, and he would then write on it. And so at the top, I just put cold. And this is what he came up with. I seen him for the first time in about 7 years. Hi, Daddy. I hate you. Daddy? Pops? More like ghost. My heart raced to find words to say. For years I contemplated this moment. Now here it is. Nothing but dead silence. He looked into my eyes. I figured he was trying to see if I felt anything. Son, I missed you. My heart froze like it was stabbed with an ice pick and stuck into a freezer, having water poured over it repeatedly, seeping into the puncture wounds, chemically changing from fluids to solids, cold, the coldest. And so many, when he read that aloud, so many of the guys in the class instantly said, I know exactly what you're talking about, because so many of them had fathers who were absent or incarcerated or for one reason or another were not part of their lives. And when they finally did get a chance to meet with that person, instead of the joy that they'd been anticipating for so many years, they instead felt this icy anger that confused them completely and, of course, made them feel all the more unworthy and awful and dark. But he found words for it, and the fact that he could, they talked about it, and the whole subject of fathers and fatherhood and came up, and it was just the catalyst for a really wonderful series of conversations.
Boy, there's such intensity in a lot of these pieces, and I mean, these are written by kids who are not even 18 years old.
I know. I mean, it's kind of humbling. I think when I was 17, I couldn't possibly have written something like this, I guess, unless I was in jail. And it's sort of humbling to think that kids who are this mixed up and who are in such dreadful circumstances now, and they have so much to regret that they'll regret for their whole lives, that they, though, could zero in on what it is that I think we all want from not only others' writing but from our own, which is to get to the heart of the human experience, of the question of who are we and why are we the way we are.
Mark Salzman is the author of True Notebooks. He spoke with Steve Paulson.